Chaitanya Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityana Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tai Mahapriyama Puro Vibhur Nirbhaya Chadiya Damusha Purusha Bhuktai Gadam Sadasa Sadasat Makailam Krishishta Bhagavan Macham Sime Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Buddhya para vidyaya
Buddhya para vidyaya
Buddhya para vidyaya Vismritatma gati pasu
Vismritatma gati pasu
Vismritatma gati pasu Strikama sosto titaram
Strikama sosto titaram
Strikama sosto titaram
Strikama sosto titaram
Takshobasta mukochirat
Takshobasta
Takshobasta mukochirat
Takshobasta mukochirat
Buddhya para vidyainya
Buddhya para vidyainya
Vismritatma gati pasu
Vismritatma gati pasu
Strikamas sostvachitaram
Strikamas sostvachitaram
Takshobasta mukochirat
Takshobasta
Synonyms, Bhutya,
by intelligence.
Para Abhyayanya,
by
accepting the body as the self. Vismritatma gati,
having forgotten the knowledge of Vishnu.
Pashu, an animal. Strikama,
Atitaram,
excessive.
Daksha,
Daksha. Bastamukha,
the face of a goat.
Achirat,
in a very short time.
Translation. Daksha has accepted the body as all in all, therefore, since he has forgotten the Vishnu Pada or Vishnu Gati and is attached to sex life only, within a short time he will have the face of a goat. Text 24. Vidya buddhi avidyayam karma mayam asau jaga jada samsarant Iha yechamum anu sarvava maninam. Those who have become as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nascently involved in fruitive activities. Such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. Purport. The three curses mentioned above are sufficient to make one as dull as stone, void of spiritual knowledge, and preoccupied with materialistic education, which is nescience. After uttering these curses, Nandishwara then cursed the Brahmanas to continue in the cycle of birth and death because of their supporting Daksha in blaspheming Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada Kira. Daksha has accepted the body as all in all, therefore, since he has forgotten the Vishnu Pada or Vishnu Gati and is attached to sex life only, within a short time he will have the face of a goat. Vidya buddhi avidyayam karma mayam asau jagat samsarant ihaye chamum antu sarvava maninam. Anu sarvava maninam.
those who have become as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nascently involved in fruitive activities. Such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in a cycle of repeated birth and death. So this is very interesting story from the Bhagavatam, very elaborately described with all the details how Daksha offended Lord Shiva in the arena of sacrifice and how Nandishwar became enraged and he started cursing the Brahmanas and very elaborately described what kind of curses he said. And after he will finish, we will hear counter curses by Bhrigu, etc. And then the whole war will start. And so, this is the history of the universe. Religious wars, right? Followers of Brahma and followers of Shiva. Brahmanas and Shaivas always fighting with each other, trying to prove who is better. But we can see how real Vaishnavas respond to this. And real Vaishnavas, the best of the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva, he just stood up and left. He was not interested in all this fighting for prestige and for showing who is better. And this is the lesson for us, that we have all three examples of critics of the Vaishnavas and example of critics of the critics and example of real Vaishnavas who don't care about these things, right? Because this material world is mental asylum, as we were mentioning, that there are no sane people here, right? And that's why Vaishnava does not expect any good from anyone living in this world. Vaishnava never becomes surprised if someone behaves in a crazy way, right? It's normal. This is material world. Another example is given that material world is Durga, right? Prison house of material existence. Do you come to the prison house expecting to find honest people there? No. Naturally, prison house will be full of criminals, and so what is the surprise if someone acts in a criminal way or in a wrong way? Rather, we should be surprised that there are still some people, even in this material world, who are acting in a sane, in a sober way. So that's why it says that devotees are very rare. Manushyanam sahasrishu kashchidya tatisitaye kash... Manushyanam sahasrishu kashchidya tatisitaye yatatam apisita nam kashchin mambeti tatvataha. That amongst many thousand of men, there are only very few who are striving for perfection, who decide, okay, let me start chanting Hare Krishna and see what will happen out of this. And then out of all this, Krishna says, hardly one can know me in truth, right? And so we are practicing devotees and we are always facing with the choice which direction to take, right? Whether take Krishna consciousness and use it for sense gratification, like we see in the example of Daksha, right? Or try to fight with other devotees and show your superiority, like we see the example of Nandishwar here. Or just be peaceful and continue with your practices of Krishna consciousness no matter what's going on around, right? And this is what this pastime is teaching us. We have these three choices: whether we deviate to the right or to the left, or go straight home back to Godhead. And actually, Nandishwar very accurately describes all the faults of Daksha, and he explains why Daksha became so dull-headed that he could not see the greatness of Lord Shiva. And very clearly it was moved by envy, just because Lord Shiva haven't shown him. Lord Shiva didn't have to, because he is in superior position, right? He is the presiding, he's the supreme devata of this material world, right? And so he doesn't have to show respect to any insignificant jiva. But because he happened to be Daksha's son-in-law, he expected some respect from Lord Shiva. And so that expectation led him to anger, right? And criticism, actually, not just anger, but rage. And this is very interesting, that this is, I think, the first and foremost lesson we can learn. I mean, there are like probably 108 lessons we can learn from this pastime. But the first and foremost is very simple, that attachment leads to frustration, right? Or as Bhagavatam says, kama krodha vijayate. Lust causes anger. And Srila Prabhupada was referring to one very famous Panchatantra story, how this is happening. And this story is telling about one potter who was so poor that he could not even afford a wheel to make pots. And so he was making one pot, and somehow, you know, because his pots were made without a wheel, they didn't come out looking very nicely. But somehow one day he really tried, and he made one very beautiful pot. And he put this pot in front of him, and he was thinking, I can sell this pot for good money, and finally I can afford a wheel. And after I will afford a wheel, you know, I can make pots very quickly and very nice quality, right? And then I can sell them for very good money, and then I will afford to buy another wheel. And after I will afford second wheel, I will also hire a poor potter who doesn't have a wheel and let him make pots under my direction. And so I'll be selling many pots, and then I'll buy many wheels and hire many potters so that they would make pots for me. And I won't even like be involved in making them. I'll be just trading. I'll be selling these pots, and my business will grow and grow. It will become nationwide, and then it will go internationally, and I'll become really wealthy, multimillionaire, right? And then, of course, after I'll have a lot of money, finally I'll marry a very nice lady from very, you know, affluent family, and why one wife after all, you know? I'll become a rich man, I can afford two wives. But of course those wives, they may not find common language with each other. So I would have to build each wife separate house. And from each wife I'll have many children. And I'll give them best education and best facilities, etc. And everything will be very nice, but there will be, of course, one problem, that they'll become, after all, very much spoiled by wealth, right? And because they didn't have to strive for it, they will not appreciate it. And they will not listen to me, and they may misbehave sometime. But I will become very strict, and I will never allow any misbehavior in my house. And he became angry at his imaginary family members. And with his, you know, hand, he smashed the pot he made. And so, but it was not just a pot. It was, multi-million dollar business, and two wives, and many children, and two big houses, and all the happiness in life. And that's why Potter could not tolerate it and died of grief. So, a little sad story. Anyway, Panchatantra tells it in a bit simplified way. We elaborated on it a little bit, but this is the idea. This story very nicely illustrates how it works. Kamakrodha Vijayate, right? You have so many lust. This is what Nandishwar tells here, right? But attachment to sex life. So lust manifested. Lust has subtle dimensions, and subtle dimensions are even stronger than gross ones, right? And what are the subtle dimensions of lust? It is attachment to wealth, to high position and prestige. That's like the topmost attachment, right? Actually, each of the following attachment is greater than the previous one. And we can see that very clearly. For example, the first thing people strive for is to have money, right? People work very hard, or they try to work very smart. By any means, they try to make money, right? And some people become quite fortunate, and they make more money than they can spend, right? And then what do they normally do? Many of those people go into politics, right? So, okay, I made enough money, now I want prestigious position, right? I want to become a political leader. And then, after they acquire a prestigious position, what do they want to do? They want to become famous, right? And so, we can see that these are the subtle attachments, which are much stronger than gross attachments. And Daksha had it all. Daksha had a lot of wealth, and Daksha had a very prestigious position, except Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Even all the demigods were standing up for him. We can just imagine how influential Daksha was. But because Lord Shiva didn't stand up for him, and so it was perceived by Daksha as a threat to his prestige, right? He became angry. And so these subtle attachments are so strong that any disturbance to those attachments becomes a cause for dissatisfaction. And thus one may be in a very nice position, but still unhappy. And this is very interesting, that actually on the way here, there is some church, and it says on the, you know, whatever, advertisement or notice board, very nice quote, it says that think about some people who are more happy in life with much less than you have, right? So just indicating that it's not the amount of material facilities which actually make us happy. There is something else, right? And what that something else is, that actually is relationship, right? And the first and foremost relationship is with the Supreme Lord, and then with others as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. And so it is very, I think, important for all of us that we have two choices in life, two goals we can focus on, right? And unfortunately, most of the people are focused on the wrong goal. And what is that goal? That goal is results. They want results in life, right? And what is the right goal? The right goal is relationships, right? And so for us as practicing devotees, it is really important to be focused on the right goal, because if you are focused on results, material world is always bringing the place which brings frustration, right? Because all the results are temporary. But it's important for us to remember that relationships are eternal. And so, but we can see that for the sake of results or lack of results, dissatisfaction with lack of results, people often destroy relationships, right? And so, therefore, Chanakya Pandit says a very important thing. He says that those who give up eternal for the sake of temporary, they lose eternal because they gave it up, right? Mm-hmm. But then they lose temporary also, because temporary is temporary. So this is really important for us. If we give up permanent for the sake of impermanent, if we become, if we choose relationships rather than results, we gain both, right? And we could talk about negative stuff a lot, but much more important for us to focus on the proper, on the right example. And the best example, the best model for us is Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada achieved great results, right? Astounding results. 108 temples in 12 years' time. I don't know if any of you had any experience in building temple or opening temple. Probably not many. I had. Somehow I was involved in building one temple. And I was very young. I was not even 30 when it started, and very enthusiastic. And we actually had enough support to build it, enough funding. And I was thinking it's going to be easy. It will take a year, maybe a year and a half to build it from scratch. And started very enthusiastically. You know how long it took? More than 10 years to complete the project, because there were so many unexpected reverses, right? And so much pain I have to go through for this sake, because I've taken the responsibility, right? And so I just couldn't give it up. Anyway, it's like very long and tedious and pretty painful story, building temple. And then a little bit later on, one senior Vaishnava approached me and he said, Oh, you've done very nicely building a temple. We need another one. Would you like to get involved? I said, no way, not in this lifetime. I don't want to go through such pain anymore. And so, if I would not know that Srila Prabhupada, for a fact, was a historical personality, really existed, right? And if I would not see the temples he opened in his lifetime, not only in his lifetime, but in the last 12 years of his life, I would never believe it. I would say, forget it. It's humanly impossible. No human would be able to. 108? Give me a break. 10? I would believe. Maybe 15. You know, it's like the greatest stretch of imagination, but not 108 under any circumstances. But yes, and we can understand that 108 temples is just a little tip of the iceberg of Prabhupada's achievements, right? In the last 12 years, so many farm communities, so many schools, restaurants, etc., and plus so many books published and translated into so many languages. It's like unbelievable. List is going on and on and on and on. And so we can understand he was a great spiritual warrior, right? Studying and practicing Krishna consciousness, we understand more and more the value of Dharma. And so all of us, we want to achieve results which would help in Krishna conscious development and decrease in materialistic and atheistic propensities in the human society, right? How many of you would like to also seriously contribute to Srila Prabhupada's mission? Okay, so it's like practically everybody. So Prabhupada achieved such astounding results, but the most important question is, how did he manage? What was his top secret? And there is no doubt, Srila Prabhupada's top secret was that he was focused on relationships, not on results. I mean, it seemed like he was, working very persistently on getting the results, but his actual focus was relationships. And when we hear Srila Prabhupada's stories from eyewitnesses, they reveal this point that, for example, one very dear result is money, right? Money is the honey. It's so sweet. Can't be beat, right? So people die for money, right? And from the very beginning, it appeared like Srila Prabhupada was really attached to making money, right? Like Brahmananda Prabhu says, in the beginning, when we were asking Srila Prabhupada, like we were brahmacharis and we were asking Srila Prabhupada for some expenditures, for some money for expenditures. And then he remembers that Srila Prabhupada would, open his purse and would take like 50-cent note and would give it to you in such a way as if he gave you the entire universe. So he was really strict with money, right? So it appeared as if he was really attached. And it could be explained, okay, this is Krishna's money, etc. Should not be misused, etc. But then we hear other stories. And other story involving one temple president who was a grihastha. And he naturally, as a grihastha, he needed some money for his maintenance, and so he decided to do business. And he started business, but the initial funding he took from the temple treasury as a temple president. And much worse, it was very substantial amount, $10,000 of those money, which is much more than now. And the worst thing, that he lost it all in business transaction. And it became known to other temple presidents in the area, and they reported it to Srila Prabhupada, and they said, Srila Prabhupada, this temple president lost so much of your money, you have to take action on him. And so Srila Prabhupada came. And one interesting habit Srila Prabhupada had, he never discussed any problems of any devotee behind the back. He would always bring that devotee into the discussion, and in front of him, they would discuss whatever needed to be discussed, right? So that, which is unfortunately not a habit nowadays. This is one thing which is different from how it was done in Srila Prabhupada's times. And so this devotee was brought into the meeting with other temple presidents. And so Srila Prabhupada, even though he was involved party, but he remained neutral, he said, so what are the concerns you have? He was telling the temple presidents that you can speak. And so they were saying he was like this, like that, you know, wasting your money and for, you know, his sake, the sake of his own family, cheating you, you know, all kinds of accusations they were hurling at this temple president. And then Srila Prabhupada looked at this temple president and he said, so what do you have to say? And he hung his head and he said, yeah, it's all true, Srila Prabhupada, you know. Yeah. Actually, everything they are accusing me, I did all this, so unfortunately, I lost so much of your money. And then Srila Prabhupada said, so you sincerely regret what you've done, is it? And he said, yeah. And you will not do such a thing again. And temple president said, no, of course, Srila Prabhupada, I'll never do anything like that again. And then Srila Prabhupada turned to other temple presidents and he said, you see, he is remorseful and he admits his mistake and he promises to never do such a thing again. And then all the temple presidents, you know, they exploded. They were saying, Srila Prabhupada, you don't know how many times he promised the same thing. And after promising, he did it again. So you have to fire him, you have to get rid of him, you know. He's not a good devotee, he's not a good leader, you know, get rid of him. And Srila Prabhupada said, but he's a devotee. And he regrets his mistake and we have to forgive. Devotees have to be forgiving. And all the leaders, they were saying, but how many times we should forgive? And Srila Prabhupada said, we should forgive as many times as it will take for him to rectify himself. So this was amazing. So this shows how much Srila Prabhupada valued his disciples, his devotees, over any results, right? He was working so hard to achieve results, but then all the results he was ready to sacrifice for the sake of one single disciple. And there are so many stories like that. And that's why we know that what he says in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, he says, you know, so much effort is there to try to introduce Krishna consciousness to the world. And if all this effort will result in one devotee, in one man becoming a pure devotee, then all our efforts will be successful. And we know that these were not just mere words, right? That, as many people do, right? They say very impressive things, but when you look at their action, it's opposite. But no, Srila Prabhupada was an acharya, right? That his words and actions were absolutely the same, right? And so this is a really important example for all of us, because actually the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to make people into the devotees of Krishna, and it is very wrong to sacrifice devotees or relationships with the devotees for the sake of any kinds of results we want to achieve, because all the results we achieve will stay here in this material world and will disappear in time, right? Whatever you achieved will not be permanent, but the relationship with devotees will continue, right? And so that's why the first and foremost offense to the holy name is to criticize and blaspheme the devotees, right? Especially those devotees who have dedicated themselves to propagation of the holy name. And it is very interesting that acharyas are saying that blasphemy or criticism may even have basis. May not even like be artificial, might be real. And so if we criticize devotee for any mistake, we are committing offense against the holy name, because that may destroy the relationship and may destroy the enthusiasm of the devotee to continue the process of devotional service. And Garuda Purana is very emphatic about it. You know, so many scriptures are so elaborately describing the results of the offense against the Vaishnava. And so Garuda Purana says that anyone who is offending Vaishnava in any way, and of course the worst offense is to kill Vaishnava, or physically injure or attack Vaishnava, or blaspheme Vaishnava, or criticize Vaishnava behind his back. And then the last one in the list is not to show happiness upon seeing a Vaishnava. That's also considered. This is also considered to be an offense. Why? Because if you don't show happiness upon seeing a Vaishnava, naturally that means you're offensive in your mind, right? Or you're envious in your mind. And that's also an offense. And then Garuda Purana says, anyone who does any of the above offenses goes to hell. Simple and clear. So, and that's why the curse Nandishwar made is pretty relevant. in text 23, which we chanted, he says that since Daksha forgotten the Vishnupada or Vishnugati and attached to sex life only, within a short time he will have the face of a goat. Basically, he went through hellish punishment. His head was chopped off and then replaced it with goat's head, which is pretty hellish. And then text 24 says, those who have become as dull as matter by cultivating materialistic education and intelligence are nascently involved in fruitive activities, such men have purposely insulted Lord Shiva. May they continue in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So that's the result. one continues to undergo material existence as a result of Vaishnava apparatus. So that's why this is the first and foremost thing we should avoid by any cost, at any cost. And then our spiritual advancement will have no hindrances. All right, anyone has any comments, questions, suggestions, complaints? Yes.
We see in the pastimes of Krishna that demigods like Indra also had envy, Brahma also had envy when he stole the clouds. Indra also sent the clouds to destroy Vrindavan. So all these are like big devotees, big time devotees. And I mean, we expect that they are Vaishnavas and you know, they behave well, but they get like angry at very insignificant small things.
Yes.
For example, in this case, Daksha just getting offended that Shiva did not get up.
Yes.
So these are tiny things. So, I mean, and demigods are fighting over it, cutting each other, you know. It's really extreme.
Yes. Yeah, Bhagavatam is extreme text. Actually, Bhagavatam is very different from any Purana, right? From any Vedic literature, because Vedic literature, they glorify demigods, right? Like Rig Veda is glorifying Indra and other demigods so much as great personalities, almost equal to the Supreme Lord. And then Bhagavatam is criticizing Indra and criticizing Brahma and criticizing everybody. But it doesn't do so just to make us lose all respect towards anybody. That would be the wrong result, wrong conclusion from Bhagavatam. Okay, there is no one who is a great devotee. Who is the only great devotee? That's me. Right? No. It shows that if a devotee has a material position and material desires, demigods means devotees with material desires, right? That's why they have all these positions and all this opulence and everything. And Daksha is amongst them. And so the result is excessive attachment and anger it brings, right? And so this is for us to warn us that if you develop attachments, then you are in a very risky situation, right? You can become disturbed by even slightest provocation and then commit very bad mistakes. Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful class.
Thank you.
Hearing you. In the purport, in I think 54th verse of the second chapter in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should not take offenses, insults directed at oneself seriously at all. But when such blasphemy is committed against the Lord or the devotees, one should act as fire, like Lord Hanuman did. So the question comes here, that since Nandeshwar is the servant of Lord Shiva, and his master is being publicly ridiculed,
yes,
is he not obliged? We also hear that when blasphemy is happening, either you leave that place, or you kill the other person, or you cut your own tongue, or kill yourself. So the complex situation here is that Nandeshwar is a servant and his master, who is a very respectable person, the most respectable, the most auspicious. So in situations in our personal lives, when we see ourselves as an audience to a conversation where devotees are being criticized by our superiors, but we are a privy to that, what is our mode of operation and what should we be doing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. When we hear the blasphemy of the devotees and someone who does that is in situation when he will not listen to our advice, and if we try to advise in the same way as Nandishwar did here, he tried, but he tried to preach to the brahmanas, but the results were disastrous, right? So sometimes trying to rectify Vaishnava aparat can bring even more Vaishnava aparat. So it's like Prahlad Maharaj gives an example: disease which is more dangerous, medicine which is more dangerous than disease, right? And this is very typical for Kali Yuga. You have medicines which are worse than disease, right? Poisons. You come with a headache, they give you a pill. You take the pill, the headache is gone, but now your kidneys are dysfunctional, right? You come to treat your kidneys, they give you a pill. Kidneys are a little bit better, but then your liver is damaged, right? You come, you get medicine for the liver, then liver pain is subdued, but then your heart is not working properly. And so they keep treating you until you're dead, right? So sometimes it is like that, you know, medicine which is worse than the disease itself. So that's why, you know, Ayurveda is very honest about it. If you have a disease, best thing is not to go to the doctor. But, you know, surrender to the Supreme Lord. So, because, you know, God cures and doctors take fees, right? This is how it works. Anyway, sometimes, you know, the medicine we try to apply produces worse results than the disease itself. And so, if we see those examples that preaching to those who are not ready to listen only produces hostility and enmity, so what do? And as per etiquette, we should not keep quiet, we should say something. So what do we say? And especially dealing with superiors or those who are not under our authority, the best and the most respectful way to correct people in this kind of position is to ask questions, right? Because this is like an etiquette. Juniors are asking questions from seniors, but with the questions you can help people to understand what's wrong with them also. And so we can understand that criticism and blasphemy is very irresponsible course of action, right? Because it just destroys everything. It doesn't produce any good results. And so the simple question we may ask these people, so, okay, I understand you are concerned and you see all these faults, it's all right, but what is your plan? What are you planning to do? And so they may tell you, okay, I'm planning to destroy these people, this and that, etc. So then, what are you planning to do? Okay, then I'm planning to take their position. This is what it will come to, right? Because people think, oh, these people are not qualified, I am qualified. Because I see their faults, that's why I'm better than them, right? But then you can ask them, so, okay, if you are in the position, then what are you going to do? And then I would be doing this and that. And so, if it is a positive course of action, because, you know, if it is negative, and then you may ask, you know, like, how do you think it will help the development of Krishna consciousness, right? So anyway, with the clarifying questions, you can help people to understand that it's actually illusory. You know, they are so-called preaching or whatever they're trying to do will never produce any good results, right? But instead of telling them directly, you may help them to understand by asking clarifying questions. Hare Krishna. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
You mentioned the art of forgiving. You know, you mentioned forgiving the Srila Prabhupada's past time. Now, as was mentioned, we are not even the devotees, we are only a shadow of the devotees. As a practitioner, we are a shadow of the devotees. So, in this condition, though it's mentioned by way that we have to tolerate, we have to develop the, we have to tolerate the things that's happening. So, how exactly we develop this art of forgiving? Just the tolerate is as good as this forgiving, because the tolerate may land up in busting it out at one point.
Okay. So how do we learn to truly forgive instead of just artificially tolerating? Yeah, that's a good question, and we'll be addressing that during our seminar, Life Without Conflicts, which will be happening on Monday, because this is the first and foremost step in our spiritual development. Because as long as we are influenced by the duality of the material world, joy and sorrow, seeing things as desirable, undesirable, good and bad, we cannot advance spiritually. And so, in terms of developing our tolerance or forgiveness, actually, like, forgiveness is on a very high level in amongst, you know, people in goodness. They consider forgiveness to be very high achievement. But it is very interesting that if we see the examples of great Vaishnavas, there is no even like discussion on forgiveness, right? For example, we never hear, you know, after Hiranyakashipu committed so many assassination attempts to, you know, against Prahlad Maharaj. He was trying to kill him in so many ways and made the life of this little boy really miserable, supposedly. We never hear, you know, Prahlad Maharaj saying, okay, I forgive my father for everything he had done, right? Or we never hear, for example, Ambarish Maharaj saying that, okay, I forgive Durvasa Muni for all his mistakes. We see that Vaishnava attitude is beyond forgiveness. Why? Because, and this is really important, because Vaishnavas never see anything wrong in anything anyone does. This is the consciousness of a real Vaishnava. And we have to strive to develop that. And how is that happening? Because of Krishna consciousness. And what is Krishna consciousness? It's a very simple thing, but it is really important. That Krishna consciousness means Ekaleshvara Krishna Rasavabhritya. That the only Lord is Krishna, and everybody else his servants. And then this verse says, everyone is dancing like puppets, and Krishna is one who is pulling the strings, right? So this is devotee's perception. No one can do anything without Krishna's sanction. And Prabhupada would say, even a blade of grass cannot move without the sanction of the Lord. And that's why devotee is seeing everything as Krishna's hand, meant for his benefit. That's why devotee never protests against any wrongdoing and never criticizes anyone and never becomes inimical towards anybody, because he understands, okay, it's Krishna's will, right? So that's why devotee never complains.
This chapter number 4 is called the creation of the fourth order.
Yes.
Can you explain what is the first, second, third, fourth, fifth orders?
Yeah, fourth order, we understand that there are four orders in human society: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. And fourth and most important order is Brahmanas, right? Because from Brahmanas everybody else comes. Alright, so I think we should stop here because it's already a little bit late. But thank you for your kind attention and enthusiastic listening and good questions. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Rasa Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.